All right. So, Exodus chapter 19. Seems like when I'm gone a week, it seems like I'm gone a month. Appreciate the good brethren who fill in for me. I know Greg filled in last week. Sure, he did an outstanding job, as he always does. But all of the men do a great job. We appreciate that. But Exodus chapter 19, remember, this is the portion now that we're getting to where we have the giving of the law. And so that is a very significant part in Moses' life and, of course, the history of Israel. So we saw in chapter 19, really it's broke down into two parts, the report that comes from Moses and the revelation that comes from God. And so we looked last time at the report. Remember, there are three parts of that, we said. First of all, the reminder at verse 4, chapter 19, Exodus 19. You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. And so just reminding them of their deliverance, that God rescued them from that Egyptian bondage. And so we make application of that to ourselves. Of course, we've been redeemed, we've been rescued and delivered, and so we ought to always remember that as well. In fact, as we've often said, our deliverance was far greater than their deliverance. They were simply delivered from physical bondage, but we were delivered from sin, and the price for our deliverance was, of course, far greater, nothing less than the blood of Christ. So we ought to remember. And then he talks about the reward that they had. At verse 5, now therefore, if you will obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine. And so that is the reward. They get to be the special people of God. Of all of the people on earth, they are the people that were separated for God's service. And we may talk a little more about that later. It is amazing how blessed they are to be in this situation. I won't go into detail about this now, but you know, we think about, and sometimes are very hard on the Israelites. And there is no excuse for the way they were. We've seen them to be stubborn, stiff-necked, and of course had a lack of faith. But as you think about these people, they've been slaves. They were born into slavery. And God, really, they haven't had much communication with God, so far as we know, at all, over their entire lives until, you know, they come forward. God hears their pleas and delivers them. And so most of their lives, they've been basically influenced by the Egyptians and their idols and all of that. They've probably been surrounded by sin in various sorts, and that's basically been their life. So is it shocking that they really demonstrate a lack of faith? And I'm not excusing them, but no, it's, you know, they no doubt stories have been told them about the past, and they know of their ancestors and Abraham, of course, and everyone. But it's you sort of understand why it is that they are the way they are. And the problem is they never really change. Through their history, they never get better. Like, you know, the old saying, you when you learn more, then you make application of that, you do better as time goes on. But the Israelites never did. But at this point, they haven't had a lot of great influence as they were slaves for all those years. But anyway... Might at least explain some of their behavior. So now God is separating them, though, has set them apart. Of all the people on the face of the earth, they're to be his treasured possession. But the thing about it is they have to obey him. They have to continue to obey his voice and keep his covenant, which we find that they fail to do. And so as a result of that, they're taken, we said, I think last time, that ultimately when Jesus comes on the scene, tells them the kingdom has been taken unto you and given to another. And so they lost that because of their unfaithfulness. And another doesn't mean another ethnic group, doesn't mean the kingdom was taken from the Jews and given to the Gentiles, but instead given to a people who would simply obey him. And in this case, those who would obey the gospel and be saved, of course, referring to the church. In 2 Peter chapter 2, we find Peter making application of all of this, quoting Exodus chapter 19 and applying it to us. Now we're the holy nation. We're the peculiar people, or God's own possession, some translations say. We're the kingdom of priests. But it still remains the same. On an individual basis, if we're going to hold on to this status of ours, we have to obey the voice of God and keep his covenant. And or else we as individuals, at least, will lose our standing with God. And so we certainly need to think about the reward that we have in Christ. Our ultimate reward is heaven, but we have to be faithful. And so that's important. Then we saw the response of the people, and the people simply say to Moses, yeah, we're going to do all of that. We'll obey the voice of God. We'll keep his covenant. We'll do all that you say. And later on, God tells Moses, the people answered right. Like, that was the right answer, the right response. And the problem is, he also tells Moses later on, I would that they had such a heart in them, because they really, that was all talk, and talk is cheap. And so we understand they answered right, just like we often do. We have to make sure we don't just answer particular questions correctly when it comes down to our faith, our service of God, or our willingness to obey God. Of course, all of us say, yeah, of course, yeah, we're going to do that. We'll do all of that. But do we have that kind of heart in us, really? Will we obey God in all things, no matter what? That's the question, and that's what God demands. And so he wants more than just talk. He wants us to prove it in our lives by obeying him in all things. So that's the report that Moses brought back, the things involved in that. And then so we come to the revelation. And in the revelation, we have three parts of that as well. We started last week. I think this is where we closed off, and where I want to spend most of our time here tonight with the readiness for this revelation. They had to prepare themselves. And then we'll see the actual record of it, and then we'll see the reaction of the people there just briefly in the rest of Exodus chapter 19. But let's think about this readiness here. We'll just go ahead and read that section beginning at verse 9, Exodus 19. At verse 9 it says, "And the Lord said to Moses, Behold, I am coming to you in a thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you, and may also believe you forever. When Moses told the words of the people to the Lord said to Moses, Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments and be ready for the third day. For on the third day, the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people, and you shall set limits for the people all around, saying, Take care not to go up into the mountain or touch the edge of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall be put to death. No hand shall touch him, but he shall be stoned or shot. Whether beast or man, he shall not live. When the trumpet sounds a long blast, they shall come up to the mountain. So Moses went down from the mountain to the people and consecrated the people, and they washed their garments. And he said to the people, Be ready for the third day. Do not go near a woman. And so again, be ready. And so this is just a great thing that they're about to experience, being in the presence of God. And so they were to be ready. And there's two parts of that. Of course, they had to wash their garments, and so far as the men go, they were not to go near any women. And so let's just stop and think about this idea of being in the presence of God, because I'm absolutely convinced that we have drifted away from recognizing how important it is, how sacred it is to be in God's presence. And because he deals here with the changing of garments, we understand that's just a sign of the respect that God deserves. But still, it is a sign of that. And we're living in a religious society today, and I don't know when or where it began, where we think it's okay just to appear before God any way we want to. And the big thing is, well, you know, God, he just cares about the heart. In fact, there's a great misunderstanding, particularly when it comes to passages like this and the changing of their garments. A lot of people say, well, you know, that's the Old Testament. And in the Old Testament, God was concerned with physical things and not the heart. But in the New Testament, he's concerned with the heart, not all this physical stuff. And, of course, that's not right. It was certain parties of the Gnostics who used to teach that there are actually two different gods. One in the Old Testament who was mean and cruel and harsh, and a whole different God, completely different being, who's the God of the New Testament. He, of course, is kind and loving and benevolent, and just two different beings altogether. Of course, that's wrong, and almost everyone except modern-day Gnostics would admit that that's his foolishness and it's not right at all. But sometimes we do have that attitude that it's a different God in nature and what pleases him and what he wants. And so, again, it's the idea that the God of the Old Testament, he was just focused on the physical. And so Israel had all of these different details, these rules and regulations they had to observe because God was concerned with the physical. And, well, God was concerned with outward details and that sort of thing. But God has always been concerned with the heart. I mean, that's always been the thing that's primary on his mind. Primarily on his mind. In fact, there's various passages that where God, we don't have time to look at them all, but look at Genesis or Jeremiah chapter 4 and at verse 4. Someone read that for me. Jeremiah, can't get that out for some reason. Jeremiah chapter 4 and at verse 4. All right, very good. So if you didn't hear that, he speaks there. Of course, the Jews were commanded to be circumcised, but there he speaks about a different kind of circumcision of the heart. And that, of course, is in the Old Testament. Go turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 10. Deuteronomy chapter 10. And here's a passage, again, that speaks sort of the same thing, but just listen to the language here. Deuteronomy chapter 10 and at verse 12 beginning. Try not to read too much here, but Deuteronomy 10 at verse 12, it says, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul." That kind of sounds like the God of the New Testament, doesn't it? There's physical things there. Walk in all his ways. Of course God demands that. Always has, always will. But also he speaks of loving him. That's a heart thing, isn't it? He talks about keeping his commandments at verse 13. Verse 14, "Behold, the Lord your God belongs heaven, and to the Lord your God belong heaven and of heavens and the earth with all that's in it. Yet the Lord set his heart in love on your fathers and chose their offspring after them, you above all peoples as you are this day." And then look at verse 16, similar to Jeremiah 4:4. "Circumcise therefore the foreskin of your heart and be no longer stubborn." You think God in the Old Testament was concerned with the heart of his people? Everybody do this. Of course he did. And yet you turn back over to Exodus chapter 19. And again, you have this idea that God, before the people show up in his presence, he wants them to ready themselves. He wants them to wash their garments and be ready. Why? Because God wants respect. And he wants them to understand being in my presence is something special. Like, it is not a casual thing. You get ready. In the third day, I'm going to come down. You ready yourself. And so you wash your garments. You men, don't go near any women for these days. This is how important it is that you realize that this is something special. And it's just a matter of respect. And it seems like we used to always understand that. And certainly, as you go through the Bible, you see it over and over and over again. Remember when Jacob was going to go back to Bethel and worship God, he and his family. He talked about, look at Genesis chapter 35. This is, of course, God had helped him, rescued him, spared him, or however you want to put it, from the wrath of Esau. Esau kind of had a change of heart. But in Genesis 35 at verse 1, it says, God said to Jacob, arise and go up to Bethel and dwell there. Make an altar there. Go there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau. And so Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, put away the foreign gods that are among you and purify yourselves and change your garments. And then let us arise and go up to Bethel so that I may make there an altar to the God who answers me in the day of my distress and has been with me wherever I have gone. So again, he knows what he's doing. We're going to go to Bethel. We're going to worship. We're going to worship God. I'm going to build an altar and we're going to worship God. So change your garments. Why? It's not as if outward things enhance the existence of God in any way. It's just showing him respect. Even Joseph, before he went, we studied this, you remember, before Joseph, for the first time, appeared before Pharaoh, what did he do? Cleaned himself up, shaved his face, changed his clothes. And we're talking about some earthly fellow who just happened to have a lot of earthly authority. But he was important, he was powerful. And Joseph knew enough to where, you know, I'm appearing before a great man. I have to prepare myself for this. Like, what would you do if the President of the United States was coming to your house? And whoever the President was had knocked on your door, whatever. You just show up in shorts and T-shirt or whatever. Let's say it was a present that you like. So you don't get foolish on me up in here. It's a president you respect and like. Let's say it was the greatest president we've ever had. Whatever. But you get the point. All right. So you know you're going to have dinner with the president. You're showing up with a T-shirt on, aren't you? You know you're not going to do that. Joseph knew better than that. Appearing before Pharaoh, who was a heathen king. And it's a matter of respect. And we give it all the time. It's very interesting. In my gospel meeting last week, something very interesting happened, I thought. I was talking with a man. All right, let me just spill this. I left my socks at home. Always leaving something. So I had to finally... I got some socks from the preacher. And preachers can't keep anything. Before you know it, the whole congregation knew about it. And then even visitors knew about it, for crying out loud. So I'm talking with a guy who's visiting, real nice guy, been in that area of Indiana for a long time. And so he started talking about one time when he was, I don't know all the details of what he was involved in, but he was a host of something. He was hosting something. I'm not 100% sure. I think it was something associated with a college, I think. He didn't say that, but I think. But anyway, he was the host of this situation somehow, and he was going to have to present things or whatever. And he had white socks on. And you know why that came up, don't you? He thought he'd tell me this story. And he was in a panic because he just had white socks on. And so he finally sees a woman he's talking to, and she has some black socks on. He's like, I need your socks. And I mean, he was so desperate. He was so embarrassed. He had his suit on and everything. White socks, that wouldn't do. He had to get some black socks on. And the ironic thing is, as he was talking to me in this gospel meeting, I'm not quite sure he had white socks on, but he sure could have. He may have, because everything else was, you know, he wasn't dressed at all. And I know this fella, don't know him well, but I know of him. He has a great reputation, and, you know, he's been a faithful Christian for years and years. I don't think there's anything sinister in our mind. I just think we have lost our way to where we can get to a point where, boy, if I'm hosting some kind of program here, I better make sure I'm dressed, better have my dress socks on. But when I go to worship God, does it really matter? And that's where we are. And we could just see, again, passage after passage where, yes, God cares about the heart. But outward things do matter, because outward things say something about the heart. Now, listen to me. Don't leave. I'm not saying we have a dress code here at Brown Street, or anyone else does or should. I'm not saying to worship God, you have to have a coat and tie. I'm not saying that at all. You men, I wish you would, but that's me. That's my opinion. I don't judge anyone else for that. But at least we can do is put on a nice shirt and some slacks, can't we? What you don't want to do is just have on, go to worship God and appear before Him just like you would anything else. Or what you've had on all day long, or it's not important at all. You have to at least show God, yes, I understand this is important. Whether it's Wednesday night, whether it's Sunday, we're going to worship God. We're in the presence of majesty, the greatest of beings. And we're there to worship Him. Act like it, at least a little bit. We don't need to be coming to services in jeans or shorts. You know, I see more and more of that. People coming in shorts to worship God. And, you know, the flip-flops even. It just, we're getting further away. You know, I don't know where we started this. It used to be that we would set aside things. We would, not everybody wore ties and things like that, but you at least dress to the point where you show we are going to worship God after all. And if you don't think it matters to God at all, you ought to go back and read some of these passages again. They mean something. He separated the priest particularly when you're going to worship God, going to the house of the Lord to worship God. Then he had requirements for the priest, wear special clothing for that. And again, all these other passages, they at least cleaned themselves up and changed their garments. They knew they were going to be in the presence of God. So, yeah, Dale, yeah.
You know, we forget. We're always in the presence of God.
Right.
He knows exactly what's going on here tonight. He knows what I'm thinking about.
Right.
He knows who showed up, who didn't show up. But we forget, I think we forget, that God is always, He is ever present.
Right.
And that's what the Jews, they forgot. Or didn't care or something, I don't know what it was, but we have the tendency to do the same thing. We sometimes think that we can sneak around the corner and God won't know.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But boy, we need to remember that everything we do, every thought we have, everything we say, God knows.
Right. Right.
You know, and it's easy to forget about that, but boy, it's something we certainly need to remember.
It does. We are always in the presence of God. But especially when you're going someplace to specifically, particularly as a group, you're going to be in the presence of God. We're going to worship God. We know what we're doing. We're coming to worship God. And God takes those moments, those times seriously. I have my Bible open to 2 Samuel chapter 12, and this is a time you might remember when David's child dies, the child he had by Bathsheba in that adulterous situation. Of course, he loved that child. You know, not the child's fault that, you know, how he came about. And so the child gets sick. In fact, it's interesting. We won't get into all of this now. But in 2 Samuel 12, at verse 15, it says, then Nathan went to his house. This is after he exposed David and caused David to see his sin. But he goes to his house, and it says, the Lord afflicted the child that Uriah's wife bore to David, and he became sick. And David, therefore, sought God on behalf of the child. And David fasted and went in and lay all night on the ground. And the elders of the house stood beside him to raise him from the ground. But he would not, nor did he eat food with him. So obviously he's grieving about his son being sick. And on the seventh day, the child died. And the servants of David were afraid to tell him that the child was dead, for they said, behold, while the child was yet alive, we spoke to him, and he did not listen to us. How then can we say to him, the child is dead? He may do himself some harm. But when David saw that his servants were whispering together, David understood that the child was dead, and David said to the servants, is the child dead? And they said, he is dead. Now watch. Then David arose from the earth, washed and anointed himself, and changed his clothes, and then he went into the house of the Lord in worship. And then he went to his own house, and when he asked, they set food before him, and he ate. And so now here's the situation. David, again, he knows what he's doing. He's going to the house of the Lord to worship. What does he do first? He knew it mattered how he appeared before God when he was about to worship him. And have no idea how David was dressed before he did that, but he was going to worship God. So he took these measures. Why? It's a matter of respect. That's all. That's it. It's a matter of respect. He knew who he was going to worship. So he knew his appearance mattered. How have we forgotten that? I mean, I know some silly article was written some years ago about Jesus not wearing a tie or something, whatever. And it seems like since then, brethren have really ratcheted up and said, well, you know, God, he just cares about our heart. Yes, he does care about our heart. That's primary. But don't our outward actions sometimes say something about our heart? And shouldn't our hearts be saying, yes, every time I go to worship God, I am worshiping the King. I'm worshiping the Creator. I need to prepare myself in some way for that. Again, you don't have to necessarily put on a tie. If you don't want to, wish you would, but you don't have to. But, you know, you don't have to do all that. Wear a nice shirt. You can do that, can't you? Wear some slacks. Show some effort that you're going to a place to be in the presence of God. Show respect. You remember, of course, a different situation, but when the Israelites came back from captivity and they were offering up those lame animals, you remember what God told them? It's kind of like appearing before the president. You would dress up if you like the president. I think you dress up anyway, to tell you the truth. But you would dress up. And God felt the same way. You know, where you wouldn't even offer one of these animals to the governor. Where's my honor? And I think God probably say the same thing today. You would do better than that with regard to earthly things. But you appear before me just any way you want. Where's my honor? It's a matter of respect. I wish we'd get back to that. I think it's a losing battle, to tell you the truth. I go to on almost all my gospel meetings. It is amazing how, I mean, we're just getting further and further away. And this is just one thing. when address is just one thing. Really, I'm talking about giving God the honor, the respect that he deserves. Because when you start, I've noticed in our services that it goes from dress, and if you don't care about that, then really what we're doing, we're forgetting that we're in the presence of God. So other things start creeping in, more whispering when we ought to be worshiping God, more playing around, playing with babies, whatever it is. And you just wonder, God's looking down from heaven, seeing a group of people who are supposed to be worshiping him, minds focused, we're worshiping him in spirit and in truth. And, you know, there's people, casual, the other people talking about other things and having conversations, all sometimes right during the worship service. I've had people complain who, not here, but in places where I've preached, who, for whatever reason, had to sit in the back and for service. And again, that I've sat in the back here. I haven't noticed that here. But where the groups of people are just loud when I'm up preaching, and I don't notice it, I don't hear it, see it, but people are just loud, talking about things. Like, what are they talking about? You know, stuff. And we're right in the middle of worship. Is that not a problem? Of course it is. We have to, if we don't learn anything else from Exodus chapter 19, you know, because in this passage, all those other passages we read, that was basically Jacob's idea. He just knew, I'm going to worship God. Listen, family, change your clothes. We're going to worship God. Joseph realized he was going before even an earthly sovereign. Yeah, I better shave and clean up to be in his presence. But in this case, in Exodus 19, we get a glimpse into how God feels about it. I'm coming down to be in your presence. In 3 days, you get ready, and one of the things you do is wash your clothes, because it matters. I want you to know it matters how you appear before me. You think we serve a different God today? You're not a Gnostic, are you? No, same God. He feels the same way. If not, why not? There's nothing, no indication that God has somehow changed his mind about how his people appear before him. We need to give him respect in what we do. All right. So, back to Exodus 19 quickly. We don't have much time to go. But now, after they do all of that, of course, they consecrate themselves just like God told them to. Of course, they would. And they did. And so finally, he appears. And it's quite the event, really, when he appears. Look down at verse 16. At verse 16, it says, on the morning of the third day, there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast, so that all the people in the camp trembled. Then Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God, and they took their stand at the foot of the mountain. Now, Mount Sinai was wrapped in smoke because the Lord had descended on it in fire. The smoke of it went up like the smoke of a kiln, and the whole mountain trembled greatly. And as the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him in thunder. The Lord came down on Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. And it continues to read. But now you think about what an awesome scene this is. And it really substantiates some of the things I said before in the last. You better respect God when you appear before him. And the Israelites now have evidence of this. Remember, this is what we call theophany. And that's when deity appears in some form. And we see plenty of it. We've seen it with him appearing before Moses in the burning bush. We saw it with Abraham when those three men appeared, angels appeared before before him, and it's clear that one of them is the Lord. And so it's deity appearing in some form. It doesn't have to be a physical form. It doesn't have to look like a man or anything like this. In this case, It's not an earthly form at all. It's just his presence, which is really what a theophany is, the presence, appearance of God's presence. And so here we see this. And it would be frightening. It's so frightening. Again, it says we get to the response of the people, the reaction of the people. They tremble. And they later on tell Moses, listen, let's not do that again. For now on, can you tell God just to talk to you and then you relay it to us? Because they were so terrified by this. And in fact, in Hebrews chapter 11, the record says that even Moses was terrified. And so what is all of this, the smoke and all that? Why did God do that? Most commentaries believe that this is, you know, those kind of symbolic things, thunder and smoke and those things, again, just highlight the majesty of God, the power of God, even the judgment of God. But when you put this overall scene together and what we have read and how he put limits around the mountain, the thing that really stands out is the holiness of God. Like, we serve a holy God, a separated, set-apart God who is far greater than we could ever imagine, far greater than all of us. And because he is who he is so righteous, so impeccably pure, there has to be a separation between him and sinful man, at least at that time. One of the things, if we really study this through, that we'll see, in fact, one of the points that the Hebrews writer is making in Hebrews 12 is how that we, you know, they trembled, he talks about. But do we have to tremble like that before God today? We have to have godly fear, but we don't have to tremble in fear, do we? And now we have greater access to God. Why? Because through Jesus Christ, the sin has been removed. Remember, we stand before God blameless. We stand before God as if we're unblameable and we haven't sinned. Irreproachable, I think it says in Colossians. So, but that's all because of the blood of Christ and our sins being washed away and God remembering our sin no more. Now we can have that sweet fellowship. But all through the Bible, we read of this separation between God and man in the sense that he is holy and separated because of who he is. And so most believe that this whole scene and this limit, they can't not only go up on the mount, they can't even touch it. There has to be a distance between them and God. And so it just speaks to the holiness of the God that we serve. Doesn't that once again say, hey, I might want to respect this God? Of course it does. Of course it does. All right, we'll pick up on chapter 20 next week.